Well, I've done a lot of shows on Enbridge, and I've shown a lot of reasons for lack of trust for Enbridge's word, considering what happened in Kalamazoo. But Enbridge is also involved right near here in Hamilton and Westover. The Line 9 is a pipe that is 37 years old. It runs from Sarnia through to Montreal, and it runs close to York University. So at some point, it does affect us in Hamilton area. The big concern over that pipeline is that it is 37 years old, and now Enbridge wants to reverse the flow of what's been going through it so that crude tar can go from Sarnia to Montreal and to ports further east. It needs to be refined even further. The new way to get this gooey tar oil through pipe is to put it under more pressure and add more chemicals, which makes it highly toxic. As we found out from the folks in Kalamazoo, Michigan, most of the people got sick and some actually died from the chemicals that were released and floating in the air while the gooey tar laid either on the ground or in the river. Now, that's something you cannot control. Enbridge has been asked to come to Hamilton by the city councillors 3 times so that the people in Hamilton that have concerns and would like to address Enbridge directly would be able to voice their concerns or ask questions directly. And 3 times Enbridge did not show, but Hamilton City Council allowed citizens to make reports anyway. And that's what took place in City Hall the morning of October 17th. There were 8 different presentations, maybe 10 at the last minute. These are the recordings of the delegations. Even though Hamilton has a television cable feed, the camera is focused on the mayor's podium and the councillors. You do not get to see the presentations, and you do not get to see the delegations. The people from the community are, again, invisible. That's why I like to go down there myself and record what's being said. So some of this audio picks up whatever is in the room around it. Please tell other people what's going on and what you've discovered, and make sure you keep yourself informed. The mainstream media is not going to be telling us, because truly it is not the elected government members that run the country. As in the States, it is the lobbyists for the most important corporations in the world that actually make the laws, and the rest of us have to abide by them. And keep in mind that Environment Hamilton has a listing of all the toxic chemicals that are put into the air by our local ArcelorMittal Dofasco. And you might be surprised when you see the list of toxins that float in the air and what we are expected to breathe. That hasn't happened for many, many years with Stelco and Dofasco. Only since ArcelorMittal took over Dofasco have some of these extra toxins been allowed into the air. It's a way to conserve money for the company. But it is also a form of toxic pollution for the residents of the city of Hamilton. So make yourself aware of Environment Hamilton's webpage, watch their Stack Watch page, watch which way the winds are blowing, and take note of the numbers for the various ministries. If you smell something in the air or you have difficulty breathing, check it out. It's more than likely coming from the stacks. There's a pipeline reversal happening, and people around the area are a little bit concerned because the pipe itself, Line 9, is 37 years old. It's been reversed once before, but that was years ago, and it was a lighter gauge of fuel going through it. This time it's going to be Dilbit, tar oil crude coming from Sarnia all the way to Montreal and further to the coast. So the concerns that the people in Hamilton have is the fact that that pipe is near farmland, and eventually it will go near York University. And will it stand up to the new crude? Not only the Dilbit that's in the tar oil, did the additional new pressure that's needed to push that gooey substance through a pipe. Things have changed since that pipeline has been built, and there has been many spills, and this is one of Enbridge's lines. And so far, in my research, I came up with over 600 spills for Enbridge. Another source told me Enbridge has a spill or a leak every 6 hours, which is pretty amazing and pretty frightening. It's hard to monitor these pipes because most of them are in very unpopulated areas. So Hamilton City Council allowed the concerned residents to have their say at City Hall on October the 17th. It was the third time that they tried to set up this situation, and the third time they invited Enbridge executives to attend to hear the concerns of the local people. But once again, Enbridge did not show. The delegations did. One of the questions I had myself was, what happened to the people in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which had one of the worst pipeline spills in North America? I've done some stories myself with the videographer, John Bolenball, who was a whistleblower, and his many videos posted on YouTube. I believe some are still there. He worked for Enbridge, and when time and money was running short, Enbridge decided to their subcontractor, SET, S-E-T, that they weren't going to haul out the oil anymore. They were going to bury it on site. And basically, they weren't really even burying it. They were hiding it. Under streams, it would be less than a foot underneath sand, and in the woodlands, in the banks, and even in the new park they built for the children, you could put a shovel down and come up with oil. But the most dramatic thing that I found out about residents in Michigan is not so much the tar, even though that is very toxic and very dangerous to be around, and it will filter into the drinking water and will kill you if you touch it or you drink it. But it has also killed people in Michigan and made 600 or more very ill just by the fumes that float in the air. And there's not much you can do about fumes. The other concern was the pipeline in Battle Creek, Michigan area, under pressure, split. There was a call put in talking about the split, but it wasn't taken seriously. The rupture itself was caused by a sharp rise in internal pressure during a regular shutdown, and it opened up an area of the pipeline that corroding fatigue cracks that built up under polyethylene tape and had become detached from the pipeline. So they knew that there was a weak area in the pipe. But unfortunately, the Edmonton operations staff misinterpreted the alarm or ignored the alarm and started up that pipeline twice under great pressure. Those two startups caused 81% of the total release of effluent and tar. It's these kinds of simple little mistakes that have caused such serious permanent damage that concerns the residents of Hamilton, Ontario.
Include that in the meeting today. So I have 10 delegates at this point in time, and I'd like to begin by calling John McGreal, John, to the podium, followed by Wes Elliott and Ruby Montour.
What perked my interest about a couple months ago when it was brought to the attention of the pipeline reversal, it brought me back to 2001 when we had a spill up in Pembroke on Fletcher Road. And it was quite a conversation back then. And Enbridge had all the data and everything else from 1990 saying it was decreasing in the thickness of corrosion, echo loss, and particles that they had did adhere to after investigation, and it's right here that it was put out in 2001. And it reminds me what I know, it's a federal matter now, National Energy Board, but they got the same recommendations for Enbridge to look at on the pipeline from Sarnia to Westover. They didn't do their due diligence back in 1990 to 2000 when we had the spill up in Binbrook. As you know, a few months ago, the bylaw was changed for residents along that strip that the pipeline runs back to. So I believe it's a federal matter, but it's a city matter. Just like at the airport, no one wants to take blame for it. So the federal, if they're in charge of the National Energy Board, we have no say in Hamilton what comes through our area. There is something wrong with how we do business. So I wrote a letter to Enbridge and National Pipeline, and with four questions. It's in the minutes. So one of the answers I wanted was mostly to deal with pipeline 10 that runs from Nanticoke, from Westover to Nanticoke to Chippewa to Tonawanda, that pipeline there. There's two lines going through there. One's abandoned, and one they just took a dig about 2 months ago. There were 2 months digging up there. An inquiry with some of the questions, And what they were doing was taking data and analyzing the pipeline for approval, if they ever get it, to push it down to the states. So the pipeline TAN investigation report was issued at Fletcher Road, Binbrook, in Binbrook. And the report highlighted the director of system integrity, compliance to Enbridge pipelines, pipeline material analyzation for Enbridge pipelines to prevent future rupture occurrence. It's all highlighted there, same as that report the city put out today. The other question, what is the most recent data of analyzation of the pipeline, Sarnia to Westover, of the integrity of the pipeline, factors of echo loss, external corrosion, internal corrosion, and material life? When they did the report in 1990, they said that it had a 10-year life, and it was 45% corrosion in Fletcher Road. When it did spill in a farmer's field, it was 17% thickness in the wall. That's a lot of corrosion within 10 years. Third question, what improvements have Edward made to the communication to the program, logic control, remote thermal unit controls, to embedded control base, to alarm, to remnant action, to a rupture, to spill, to shut out the line? It took them over 12 hours to communicate from Tonawanda to the spill to Edmonton, and it was happened to be on the weekend. Fourth question I asked is information to inspection dig on line 10 Westover to Buffalo at Binbrook on Region Road 56. I was informed you were gathering data on the condition of the pipeline. There are two pipelines, one is active, the second one is abandoned. When we don't know, because it was Frontier at the time, Redbridge took over. And the line completely, is the line going to be completely decommissioned? So there are the four questions asked, and you people should ask too, is the integrity of the pipelines. It's been in the ground for 30 years. I don't represent nobody. I represent myself and child and environment of the city. So that old movie, Billy Hillbillies, man, there's gold in the backyards. So if we get a spill up in Binbrook, people may think they own it. So all I'm saying is that it is our business. We can't fluff it off in the National Energy Board because it's a federal agency. All we got to see is look at the water in Binbrook. And look at the water that's contaminated. Let's work together, all three parties, and improve the environment. Thank you.
Thanks, John. There's one question, John, from your one councilor, Councilor Johnson.
Thank you, and good morning, John. You asked four questions, and they're very profound questions. Did you ever get any answers back?
Ed Hall, that was supposed to be here, I don't think he is here, said he'd get back to me. He hasn't got back yet.
And it looks like you wrote this way back in August.
Yes.
And you still haven't heard back?
No, not even from the National Energy Board.
What are your next steps?
There's supposed to be a meeting, but I don't know when it is, for community input. They did have one, but not too many people knew about it.
Okay. And at the appropriate time, I'd like to ask staff if they have any information about the spill at Fletcher Road. That it was in our city, it would be wonderful to find out if there's any impact on that as well. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
I think that's a good general comment that, you know, let's make notes about some of these questions we want to ask staff. And of course, staff may not have all the answers today, so we may want to make a list of questions that we want to forward on to Enbridge from the city. Your questions, John, are good examples, but there may be others that we want to ask the questions and get some of those answers. Thanks, John.
Well, the report is on their website. Eh? Just look up Fletcher Road spill.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Our next speaker, Delegate Wes Elliott and Ruby Montour from the Haudenosaunee. Are they here this morning? Don't see them yet, so we'll see if they come a bit later. Our next speaker is Ken Stone from Hamilton 350 Committee. Ken, followed by Janet Chafe, is next after Ken. Morning, Ken.
I'm a member of the listed committees. but today I'm speaking entirely on my own behalf. Members of City Council, please take action to prevent an environmental catastrophe from happening in Hamilton. That catastrophe would be the rupture of the Enbridge Pipeline No. 9, which would pour diluted bitumen into the Beverly Swamp and or one of the many creeks that flow into Lake Ontario. Enbridge plans to reverse the flow of its Line 9 pipeline through Hamilton from west to east using exactly the same type of 37-year-old steel pipe that ruptured last year in Kalamazoo, Michigan, causing a $1 billion disaster that is still not fully cleaned up. It took Enbridge a full 17 hours even to turn off the flow of that pipeline after the rupture. Crude oil is not corrosive, but diluted bitumen, known as Dilbit, is. Crude oil requires less pipeline pressure to move through a pipeline than Dilbit. And Dilbit, when bursting from a break in a ruptured, outdated pipe under greater pressure than it was built for, does not float on water. Rather, it sinks to the bottom where it's hard to remove and also releases solvents into the atmosphere, which would cause respiratory problems and perhaps even deaths among residents, first responders, and wildlife nearby. In short, the proposal to ship Dilbit through Enbridge Line 9 is a disaster waiting to happen. I ask you to take three immediate steps to prevent this environmental catastrophe. First, because the Harper government of Canada has recklessly cancelled the environmental assessment of this project, I request that you direct your legal staff to initiate a legal challenge right up to the Supreme Court, if necessary, in order to force this project to undergo a proper environmental assessment. Harper is the voice of the oil industry in Canada. Line 9 through Hamilton represents the last hope of the consortium of oil companies which exploit the tar sands to ship out their environmentally disastrous product to world markets. The proposed Keystone Pipeline to ship out the tar sands bitumen through the U.S. for refinement in Texas has been nixed for now by Obama. The proposed Northern Gateway Pipeline to transfer tar sands bitumen to the Canadian West Coast and to be shipped to Asian markets by supertanker, shades of the Exxon Valdez, has been nixed by British Columbia. So now Enbridge wants to ship its Dilbit through Hamilton to be refined in Maine. In my opinion, the tar sands development should be shut down. This mining operation is environmentally unsustainable and represents an obsolete 1950s paradigm of the use of fossil fuels to power a completely outdated system of private transportation using cars and trucks. It is the single largest site in the world producing CO2, a greenhouse gas, which is ultimately affecting climate change, causing the melting of the polar ice cap, the gasification of methane frozen in the polar seabed and in the tundra, global warming, increasingly severe weather patterns, which we have already suffered here in Hamilton, and may very well bring about the end of human civilization as we know it now in the very near future. Until the tar sands devastation can be completely shut down, I would also argue that the City of Hamilton should take two further steps. The first is to pass a bylaw or change the building code to prevent any energy pipeline older than 30 years from operating in Hamilton. The result of that bylaw or change the building code would hopefully be that until the tar sands development can be terminated, a new pipeline with steel made right here in Hamilton could be built. A second step would be for the City of Hamilton to join with other city councils in Canada, trade unions, citizens groups, and political parties to form a coalition to demand that the tar sands bitumen be refined in Canada by Canadian workers, using improved technologies to prevent any air or water pollution. In this way, if we can't close down the tar sands in the immediate future, we can at least create some employment for Canadians. In summary, the following are my three recommendations. Number one, the City of Hamilton initiate a legal challenge of the exemption of Line 9 Enbridge Pipeline from an environmental assessment. Number two, the City pass a bylaw or amend its building code to prevent any pipeline over 30 years of age from being used to transport energy resources within the boundaries of the City of Hamilton. And three, the City work with other municipalities and interested parties to pressure the federal government to create clean refining capacity for tar sands bitumen in southern Ontario. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks very much, Ken. We have a question from Councillor Duval.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Ken, for appreciating your coming in and expressing your views.
So what I was getting out of that, even though it's happening now, but your main concern is about the conditions of the pipe, to make sure it's up-to-date piping that we have.
Well, I think that's one of my main concerns. I think that it's a disaster waiting to happen to let Enbridge pipe diluted bitumen through a pipe that wasn't designed for diluted bitumen over 37 years ago. And this pipeline also would have to run under increased pressure than it was designed for. I think it's incumbent upon the councillors here today to consider what would happen if this pipeline would burst, something like what happened in Binbrook. It would be a disaster, and we just can't, you know, wash our hands clean of it today and saying it's a federal matter. The city of Hamilton, you councillors, have to do something about it.
Thank you, and through you, Mr. Chair, to Ken. Ken, you don't think there's adequate testing that is being done now on the pipe, so you're worried about the fatigue from our outside climate, our winter controls. The inside, I understand. I mean, you have oil, but there isn't still piping, the fatigue, the corrosion. You don't believe that there is being tested properly?
Actually, this morning on the CBC News, I heard a report that there's even concern that the welds on these pipelines were never inspected properly. They were left to the self-regulation of the pipeline companies. As I say, a disaster waiting to happen. And here we have steel plants sitting idle, blast furnaces sitting idle, workers sitting home, maybe collecting unemployment insurance, maybe not. They could be working, building a new pipeline until such time as the tar sands are shut down.
Okay. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Councillor Duvall. Councillor Pearson, followed by Councillor Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, and thank you, sir, for coming in. Excellent comments. You actually, I was ticking off some of my concerns, so you've raised them. I appreciate that, but I'd also like to ask that you, would you be grateful to provide your overview, your presentation to the clerk, so
sure,
that we can have that on record? Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Pearson. Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ken, you have, you've made some pretty serious allegations today, particularly around the 30-year lifespan of a pipeline. Do you have any reports from a professional engineer who specializes in oil transmission through pipelines that confirms your allegations?
I personally do not, but I expect that speakers who follow me will have that information.
Okay, look forward to hearing that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Any other questions at this point? Thanks very much, Ken.
You're welcome.
And our next speaker is Janet Chafe. Janet, is she here this morning? Here's Janet back here, and then followed by Maggie Hughes after Janet. Morning, Janet.
Morning. Good morning. I'm here to speak about the unspeakable. I would like to refer to the history of the city. In 1950, there were over 500 industries here. Hamilton produced cars, appliances, candy, steel, 500 industries. Where are they now? The profits are gone, the jobs are gone, what's left is the pollution. All the companies that made a fortune left, and they left the land destroyed. The air was unbreathable. People died breathing the air of Hamilton. I moved into Hamilton. I was amazed. So now we have Enbridge, which I consider a dirty name. We have a pipeline which is old, really old. We have a company which has been, I would say, in a flattering way, misleading. It's had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of spills. Yet they want the right to bring bitumen through this pipe. It is my opinion that this council, which is supported by my taxes, which are really beggaring me now, and other residents are paying the same amount. We pay you to to represent our interests. I don't see how allowing Enbridge to reverse the flow and bring in this oil from the tar sands, this oil which takes 3 BTUs to produce 1 BTU of oil. I mean, that's insane. It's destroying the boreal forest. It's destroying the world. I do not know that Hamilton is going to demand from Enbridge a bond, that if there is a problem, they will pay, say, $5 billion, because we're still dealing with the harbor. We haven't got that cleared up. We still have industrial sites we haven't cleared up. We still have dirty air. Like, when will Hamilton be represented by its council rather than businesses who are allowed to do whatever they want to do as long as they're making money here in Hamilton? Every year, 100 people die prematurely from the air alone. I've been in Hamilton almost 50 years. That's a lot of people who have died prematurely. And that is not counting the hospital admissions, which is infinitely bigger. It's a major cost to our health plan. So that's my suggestion, that you, as council, because we cannot count on Mr. Harper, that's for sure. I don't think we can count on the province. This is Hamilton. You people are paid to represent the people of Hamilton. I think you need to ask for billions in a bond. Maybe that will make Enbridge think. And I would like to say, all of you know dirty words. You don't use them in public. Enbridge is a dirty word. The tar sands is a dirty word. It is beyond. I mean, this city was the electric city. Mistakes were made out of ignorance. We are not ignorant about Enbridge.
Thanks, Jenna. Okay, our next speaker is Alicia Petroni. Yep, thank you.
So this is my second time in the council chambers. I just recently moved to Hamilton. The first time I was here was for a press release for the Blackout Speak Out campaign opposing the federal budget bill. That was nearly 5 months ago, and today we are seeing its effects. The reversal of Line 9 is just cruising through, and its federal environmental assessment canceled. I'd like to thank council for bringing this issue to the General Issues Committee. I think in this new era, post-Bill C-38, I believe municipal government can step up in this empty space left from the dismantling of SIA. I am disappointed, however, with the city staff report and how they were so easily satisfied with the National Energy Board's findings. Enbridge is playing dirty, and I'm shocked to see how easily everyone is looking past that. Where are they today? They have canceled twice, and if they were playing fair, shouldn't they be able to be here today and stand by their project? Why are they unwilling to reveal what they truly plan to put through the pipeline? This is despicable behavior and should not be tolerated. In an article published on October 15th, Environmental Defense calls the Line 9 reversal a warm, fuzzy idea that this claiming that the oil will stay in Canada, when actually it's a way for industry to gain acceptance when the real plan is to export more raw tar sand oil to other countries. Environmental Defense called it a bait and switch when we have the Northern Gateway pipeline as smoke and mirrors while they head east through a path of less resistance and mobilization. If Line 9 isn't about exporting tar sands, then why do we have Canadian diplomats quietly lobbying the government of Maine about the benefits of the tar sands? I found it laughable in the National Environmental Board's report that there is no mention of climate change. The only mention of greenhouse gases is found in Section 8.0, Environmental Effects Analysis, or 8.1, Project Environmental Interactions, or 8.3, on Cumulative Effects. And they mention that there will be unavoidable temporary or occasional increases of greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere from vehicle use. So when we're going to be making the construction at the Westover, we're talking about greenhouse gases of a few trucks in the area during construction, when we're forgetting about the extreme impact of extracting this energy from Alberta. So we're just forgetting that. So we're talking about this little ant when there's an elephant in the room, and it's a massive energy requirement to extract the tar sands and transport it across this massive country. I want to remind Council that it is currently Hamilton's fourth Climate Change Action Month, and by doing nothing today, you are saying, yes, let's expand the tar sands. And this flies directly in the face of the Hamilton Climate Change Charter. You have the unique opportunity to stand up and do what is right, uphold the treaties with Indigenous people, and be on the right side of this issue. I'm not sure exactly how we can do that. I had suggested maybe you can write a public statement from the city officially opposing it, or denying the permit to take water, or making a suggestion to the Hamilton Conservation Authority to not grant them their permit. But I did enjoy Ken's recommendations to initiate a legal challenge against the federal for not having an environmental assessment, or to change the building codes, or refine it in Canada. Or also Janet's suggestion of creating a bond, a $1 billion bond. Bottom line, the tar sands are planning to triple their production, 5.1 barrels per day, and that's more than Canadian consumption rate. This would mean no added value from refining, few jobs, and little economic benefit, yet with all the risks. Thank you.
Thanks very much. For Alicia from the committee. Thanks very much, Alicia. Maggie Hughes up next. Maggie?
What I want to show you is I do a lot of research. I do campus community news for those that don't know what I do. And I've been researching Enbridge a lot, and I thought, what if a pipe broke here? What would it look like? So I went to Michigan, and I found a lot of videos on what happened. So I'm going to play.
Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and you're listening to The Current. Brenda Kenny is the president and CEO of the Canadian Energy Pipeline Association.
Even if there's a spill, they are cleaned up within the matter of a year or two. And when you look at some of them, such as the incident in Michigan, it's been completely cleaned up.
We're at Talmadge Creek, and I'm going to have to show you that they put sand over the top of the oil. Can you see how clear it is? You can see right down at the bottom, looks really clear. I'm going to take some sand. I'm going to show you real close up. There's the sand. Alright. See, there's no sheen. The reason why that's important is because when I dig down, the oil is underneath the sand. See it coming up? It's under the sand. It's not in the sand, it's under the sand that they put there. In massive amounts.
That's disgusting.
My name's Ben Gotchel. I live in Lincoln, Nebraska right now. I grew up on a ranch in Hope County, Nebraska in the sand hills. and the Keystone XL pipeline is going to come through the sand hills. And so I came here to Michigan to see what a tar sands oil spill would look like. And what I found out is that it's far worse than I could have imagined. What we have here is lies. The extent of the damage here is far worse than Enbridge said it was, and the extent of the cleanup is far more inadequate than they could ever even explain. What we have here is a cover-up of intense magnitude. This is a crime. This is a crime against nature. It's a crime against humanity. And we do not want something like this going through the sand hills, Nebraska. No amount of oil is worth it. We can't risk our land and water for this. We can't do that. And I'm going to do everything I can to stop that from happening.
My name is Adrian Mandela. I live in East Texas, where the Keystone XL pipeline is proposed to be constructed. It would cross 6 river channels and many bogs, sloughs, and bayous, woodlands, similar to what I've witnessed here in Marshall, Michigan. I somewhat imagine what it might be like if we had a spill in East Texas, but the magnitude of what I've seen here is beyond imagination. I'm just stunned by what you showed us, John. The cover-up is beyond reality. How they can consciously do this is beyond imagination. It's unconscionable.
At a meeting in which John Duncan told SCT employees that they didn't have to cover up oil if it bothered their conscience. Yes. And when did that take place? After an O'Brien representative told us to spread oily debris in the woods out thinner so it would look less like there was thick oil there.
I believe 6 people have died here. We just had another person 2 days ago die at Baker Trailer Park.
I noticed some problems with my lungs that I never had before.
Right. Yeah. And I believe that's from all the chemicals you breathe in.
Yep. Your headaches, nausea, fatigue, forgetfulness, all of it.
What was some of your symptoms that you had after the oil spill?
I had 3 seizures at the other house and 2 seizures where I live now.
And my son actually had an episode where he looked like he was having seizures, passing out. I even took him to the ER.
I got migraines. I had a seizure for the first time in my life.
Grab the bag, please.
Okay, that was just a short clip to show you what happened in Battle Creek, Michigan. And there's 6 people have died from that area simply from breathing in the toxic fumes because there was just so many of them. But I wanted to just read a couple of things. Pipeline companies aren't required to disclose what chemicals they mix the bitumen to make it thin enough to flow down a pipeline. It's a trade secret. That's particularly scary because these dilutants evaporate into the air after a spill, and any people unlucky enough to be nearby breathe in the mysterious mixture. In the case of Enbridge, it made a lot of people sick, 600 people at least. 60% were interviewed. They experienced headaches, difficulties breathing, coughs, vomiting, anxiety. And as you saw on the screen, a lot of them had seizures. The first time in their life they had neurological disorders. One high school, public school teacher stated to Michigan Public Radio that her students were vomiting a brown, sticky, gooey mass. And I think this is something we need to pay attention to. There is not enough of the oil reported. It was 3 days before it was reported, so that tar oil was around 3 days. There was a lot of it that was not picked up. And some of these videos helped the EPA and the United States go back to Enbridge and say, you hid the oil, you buried it, you put it underneath the sand as you saw in the beginning. They didn't get it all out, they buried it, and they didn't bury it deep enough. They actually tried to tell some people that it would dissolve into the environment, and if anybody knows about that kind of oil, it does not dissolve. So a lot of people became sick and their wells were damaged and permanently ill because of the fumes. A semi-tractor trailer went through right after that spill. A semi-tractor trailer filled with dead animals. So there's a lot of things that were not brought out into the public mainstream media with what happened because of that spill in Michigan. And I just want everybody here to know what we're looking at if something happens. And apparently, Enbridge made that spill happen because they put more pressure through the pipes twice after getting a notice. 80% of that deluge that was released and ruptured the pipe, I think it was about a 4-foot long opening, was because of the pressure to push that drill bit through that pipe. We're talking about a 37-year-old pipe. We're also talking about a company that has another whistleblower from North Dakota who is an engineer, worked with Enbridge, saw something he didn't like, reported it, and was fired. That case is still in the courts. What he wanted to report is that he found the products to be rather iffy. The steel was bought from China. It was second-grade steel. It was not top of the line. How do we know? How do we have any control over the pipeline that is near us? How can we control what that pipe is made out of? A new pipeline, at least, should go down. Nobody should even consider using a 37-year-old pipe with the type of drill bit and pressure needed today to move that effluent through.
Okay, thanks very much, Maggie, and thanks for sticking with us on the technology there. Any questions for Maggie? Okay, thanks very much, Maggie.
Thank you to the council for holding this. I share a lot of the same views and concerns that have already been vocalized, and some of the stuff I'll say will be a bit of repeat. But this is just a piece that, the way the whole thing makes sense to me, just a piece that has come to me. Maggie's film got the emotions going a little bit. Maggie, I wish I would have spoke before you. Okay. So my piece is entitled, Why No Line 9 Pipeline Reversal? Let me count the reasons. And you'll see as my argument unfolds, it's also applicable to the Northern Gateway Pipeline, Keystone XL Pipeline, or any other means of transporting any product out of the tar sands project. You're probably already familiar with, or will hear today, numerous facts like Enbridge's disrespect of Indigenous rights and treaties, Enbridge's track record on spills and their lack of initiative to deal with them appropriately, Enbridge's habit of lying about the statistical chances of a pipeline leak or lying about what is going through their pipeline when there is a leak, i.e. conventional oil versus tar sands dilbit, which is raw bitumen thinned with lighter petroleum products and proprietary chemicals. Dilbit is far more difficult and costly to clean up. It is currently being examined whether dilbit increases the risk of pipeline spills. Enbridge even lies about islands or the existence thereof. Enbridge has proven themselves untrustworthy. To me, that's end of story. And if this isn't enough to say no pipeline, the health implications of spills, such as were cited in a report on the Kalamazoo River spill, should be. Within 2 days, the off-gassing of the toxic dilutants of the bitumen caused symptoms such as Maggie talked about, nausea, dizziness, headaches, coughing, fatigue, in 60% of the local population. And the micro-PAHs used to dilute the bitumen cause cancer, asthma, hormone, and reproductive problems. I have also heard that the Line 9 pipeline is not safe for transporting bitumen or dilbit due to the higher pressure needed to pump the product, a product of this viscosity through it. And as people have mentioned today, the age of the pipeline is a concern. Despite all these facts, I think we need to back up to the root cause of the problem, the tar sands project. One needs only to look at the pictures of the desolation of the land that was once boreal forest, so important to the overall health of our ecosystem. One needs only to hear of the negative impact this clearing of the land has had on caribou populations and no doubt numerous other human, non-human species. And the subsequent typical human practice of covering up mistakes by demonizing and persecuting another non-human species, in this case, the wolf. One needs only to know about the poisoning of our water systems through the extraction process of the tar sands oil and the health implications for Indigenous communities downstream. Due to this project, Canada is now the biggest contributor to climate change worldwide. Adding insult to injury, Harper has now gutted the Fisheries Act and almost obliterated the environmental assessment process to facilitate pushing all these pipelines through without scrutiny. Clearly, our addiction to oil is out of control when it comes down to all this. In truth, all of the lands that these pipelines would go through are too sensitive, the risk of leaks too high, and we all have too much to lose by taking these risks. We don't have to have all these discussions pipeline by pipeline. As usual, the solution is easier than we are making it out to be. No more tar sands. It shouldn't exist. It is a shame to Canada. And I will conclude with my vision, and everyone here plays a role in that, decision makers, people. I wish Enbridge was here to hear their role. I have a dream, and that is that human greed will diminish to the point where corporations will one day exist to produce only ethical products that people actually need, that the masses will be enlightened and voluntarily participate in extreme conservation methods, eliminating their need for dirty energy, and alternatively, meeting their energy needs through lower impact forms of energy production. That people will realize that clean air, water, and land, and our health is more important than anything else, and these translate into quality of life. Also, that biodiversity and the environment holds a huge economic value and is very connected to human health and well-being. That people will realize that as a collective, we have more power than the corporations and will do anything it takes to stop every means for transporting any product derived from the tar sands. So there is not only no longer a need for expansion of this project, but also no longer a need for the tar sands. I have a dream that we, the people, will stop this madness. I know it's ideological, but that's my take on that piece.
Thanks very much, Diane. Okay, so I've got Don McLean, and followed by Linda Lukasik. Morning, Don.
Good morning, Councilor McCaddy, Deputy Mayor. Thank you all to having us allowed to speak here today. My technological challenge doesn't look like it's a big one. Thanks very much. I don't want to talk very specifically about the Enbridge pipeline. You've heard quite a lot this morning, and I think probably gotten a good picture of the challenges, the risks that are involved with this, and some of the challenges in terms of how the municipal government can address it. I want to talk about what this is. At the end of the day, I think that you need to take action with respect to this issue because of its connection to climate change. There are lots of other reasons you've already heard. This is from the National Weather Service of the United Kingdom, the Met Office, and it shows the rank of the hottest years to the coldest over the last 100 years or so. And you can see, as you're well aware, that all the hot years are in the last decade and a half, and that we're seeing a very dramatic increase in average global temperatures. That increase, though, is still only about 0.75, 0.8 degrees centigrade. And it is already clearly having effects. You're seeing it here in Hamilton. We've been pointing out for some time through the 350 committee that there have been 18 storms in Hamilton since 2004 that have flooded homes. You've responded with compassionate grants. You've responded with substantial investments in trying to address the stormwater system, the sewer system, tens of millions of dollars. You had a storm here back in July. Councillor Clark and Councillor Johnson in particular know a great deal about this because it happened in their area of the city. We were very fortunate that it didn't happen a bit further north. That storm was a 1,000-year storm. If it had been 2 or 3 kilometers further north, we would have been evacuating the lower city. We would not have a road which my name has been closely associated with. It would not be passable or usable. the amount of rain that came down, 6 inches in 3 hours, would have destroyed our sewage treatment plant wet well system. We would have had a huge catastrophe in the city, and it would be very much connected to climate change. Climate change is being driven, as you know, by carbon dioxide concentrations. That's where it was in the last ice age. That's where it was in the early 1900s. That's where it was when this graph was put together about 4 years ago, 387 parts per million. It's actually now almost 400 parts per million. And that's where it will be by mid-century if we continue with business as usual. And clearly the tar sands and the government of Canada and those who are pushing that are on the path of business as usual. This is some idea of what's happening on a world scale in terms of flooding. We're seeing it here in Hamilton. We're not the only ones, and what we're seeing is minor compared to what's happening elsewhere in the world. This is what's happening with our polar ice cap. The various lines on there, the gray lines and the black lines, are various models from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change on the expectation of how long it would take for the Arctic ice to completely disappear in the summer. And the orange line is what's actually happening. And in terms of actual quantities, we have lost, if you take the average amount of ice in the polar ice cap from 1979 to 2000, the period in which we've been able to use satellite information to calculate the actual volume, the volume in that average period was 12,000 cubic kilometers. It fell below 3,000 cubic kilometers at the end of August. So the dramatic loss, 75% really of our Arctic ice cap gone already, and the implications that will have. This is a really interesting graph. It shows where global warming is going. We know that the carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases are increasing in the atmosphere and increasing the temperatures. Most of that is not going into the atmosphere where we're feeling it. Most of it is not affecting the continents where we're feeling it. Most of it is going into the oceans. This is also from the Met Office. It's the warming possibilities for 2100 under a no policy scenario. You can spin the wheel. We don't know exactly what it'll be, but the lowest number you can see there is 3 to 4 degrees centigrade, and keep in mind that we've gone 0.8 so far. If you look at the warming possibilities in 2100 under the policy scenario, the blue or green one, the numbers are still at minimum 1 to 2 degrees centigrade, and more likely in the 2.5 to 3 degrees centigrade, and that's with aggressive efforts to stop the emissions that we're putting through. This is the pattern of warming under, it's the UK Ministry's simulations I've put it from the Met Office and the Hadley Centre, the Met Office and Hadley Centre simulations from UK, of where we would be in 2090 in terms of the changes. The only thing there that is less than what we have currently is in the purple, and you don't see any purple on there. I don't think there's any at all. You have a vast increase, particularly in Canada. If you look in the portion that we're in southern Ontario around the Great Lakes, we're talking 8 to 10 degrees centigrade increase. That means that we're going to have the kind of drought that we have in the U.S. this summer is going to be a permanent drought. We're not going to have any agriculture. We're going to have deserts across the middle of our continent. We are a self-roasting species. All you have to do is add oil. I think my message simply to you is when you're addressing the question of how we address tar sands coming through our community and the dangers that are associated with that, you have to put that into the perspective of the extreme dangers that we all face as a result of climate change and what it's doing on a global scale. My generation, I guess I'm pretty much on the same one as most of you, our parents' generation used to ask a question. They asked, why didn't the Germans do something? And you know what it was about. The rest of the world is asking that question today about Canadians, about Canadian decision makers. We know that we have a federal government that is married to the oil sector and is not going to take anything, any action at all to address this problem. Somebody has to, and I'm hoping that you will see that as part of your responsibility. Thanks.
Questions for Don? Okay. Thanks very much, Don. Thanks. And our last speaker, Linda Lukasik. Linda, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. I'm not going to repeat anything that's been said already. A lot of folks have raised the concerns that we share as Environment Hamilton with this proposed plan and with the broader concerns about the tar sand. It's getting to be a really emotional issue, and I feel for Diana, who's sitting up there getting weepy listening to her and her message and hope for a different world. It's getting harder to look at what's happening and think about the localized context, and not get upset about it. It's getting frightening. I read the staff report that went to all of you on this issue, and one of the things that really struck me was this feeling that there are concerns, but we don't have legal jurisdiction over the issues. So staff pointed to the fact that I think there are about 109 water wells that are within a kilometer of areas along this pipeline where work will be done. And they expressed concerns about a potential spill, and it was sort of the conclusion that, well, I guess if it happens, we'll deal with it, but it's something we're really worried about. So I guess one of the things I wanted to convey to you today is that I hope, as our elected officials, others have urged you to speak on all of our behalfs, I hope you get feisty. You know, I think about the Premier of British Columbia, and I think, wow, she's really had a lot of chutzpah when it comes to the Northern Gateway, and I think you all need to start to look at this issue in the same way. Think about what you can do to raise concerns and speak out for all of us. I know more and more of us are trying to figure that out too. How can we effectively stop the craziness that's happening through proposals like this one? So you all have the right to ask, despite the jurisdictional limitations. You can be speaking out, making statements. You know, I took a little bit of time and I looked at the broad list of stakeholders that had commented through the National Energy Board hearings on the pipeline. One of the things I wanted to do is read one of the, just a small portion of some comments made by Chief Chris Plain. He's chief of the Anjanong First Nation in Sarnia. And part of the reason why I want to read this little segment is I always think about, we've got some, what's the right word, kinship, solidarity with Sarnia, just because of some of the challenges that they face as an industrial community. And one thing that really jumped out at me was this concern. He said, given the pre-existing pollution of the air, water, and land on our reserve and in our traditional territory, and the corresponding health, cultural, and economic impacts of that pollution, we're seriously concerned that the reversal of flow in Line 9 between the Sarnia and Westover terminals may cause direct and cumulative environmental and health impacts. So I think all of you around this table also need to be mindful of context. We've already got struggles in Hamilton with legacy issues and current problems, and can we really afford to take on more? And just one more thing I want to add as a more concrete and tangible step. I urge you to look into what we do at Environment Hamilton all the time, and we always encourage people to do. Exercise your environmental rights where you can. So in the staff report, there are two likely permits that Enbridge will need to secure, and I'll be honest, at this stage, I don't know where the permit that they need from the Hamilton Conservation Authority is at. I don't know if that's been granted. If it hasn't, I hope the city gets right in there and asks questions and raises concerns. I do know that there hasn't been a permit to take water application put forward yet, because I watch the Environmental Bill of Rights Registry at the provincial level like a hawk. So I'm happy to send a note to whoever needs to be sent a note when that posting appears on the registry, because there's another opportunity for all of us to weigh in and to raise concerns with the province. And in doing that, to get at least to some degree to any concerns we have around this project. So I'm going to leave it there. And again, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Thanks.